Welcome to the Tuesday Sports Show.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the ORN Sport on this Tuesday evening.
We will be discussing over the next hour all the sports news from the past week and previewing what's to come over the next 7 days.
Murray wins! Murray wins it all! This is going to be a top play. Control this, and the cup is his. He's coming after him. He's immortal now. Usain's done it.
Here's Trump with three. Yes! A spectacular move by Michael Trump.
This is URN Sport.
Good afternoon, welcome to today's Tuesday Sports Show. I'm your host, Chris Young. I'm joined here by a very select group of Jack Newman, Tom Ellerman, and Alex Zonnefeld. Our first topic for today is going to be the cricket. And Jack, tell us a little bit about what's happened.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know what, don't tune into cricket that often, England have just been playing in a free match series against South Africa in the one-day format of the game, which is a 50-over game. And this comes just before, in a build-up to the Champions Trophy, which happens in the next coming weeks. And yeah, England got off to a good start against South Africa in the first game. Fantastic from the boys out there, and they won quite comfortably, I'd like to say, by 72 runs. It was absolutely fantastic batting from Owen Morgan, the England captain, who managed to score a 107 from 93 balls, so fantastic from England in the first test. They went on to make 339 for 6 and bowled South Africa all out for 267. So 1-0 up, only need to win one more. Go into the second game, and I have to say, watching the highlights of this one, it was a lot closer than I think the England fans would have hoped it had been. It went down to the final over with South Africa needing, I think it was, they needed 7 in the last over, 7 from 6 balls in the last over, I think it was, and it was fantastic from Ball, our bowler, restricting them to, it was actually Wood, the who bowled the final over.
Mark Wood,
he bowled the final over, restricted South Africa to, I think it was just 2 or 3 runs off of that final over, which was absolutely fantastic, which of course meant that we sealed victory in the 3-day test, in the 3-day series in the ODIs. But unfortunately, going into the Champions Trophy, the final game was a bit weird. It was, from an England standpoint, very, very disappointing. You know, having just won the series, you would have thought that they wanted to push on and go into the Champions Trophy with a bit of good form or a bit of more better form. But unfortunately, you know, capitulation is a bit of an understatement when you talk about the batting lineup and how they did.
Yeah, massively.
It was, you know, within 5 overs, we had lost 6 wickets, which, I think, you know, it just tells the story itself, you know, losing so many after playing so well as well. I mean, we did get put into bat first because it was bowling conditions. The track was very, very dry, and it looked as if the ball would be gripping off of the surface quite a lot, and the conditions were overcast, so the ball would be swinging around. So obviously being put into bat first is never going to be easy in those kind of conditions. But for someone of England's pedigree, you'd think that, you know, we've been taking the attack to every team. It's whenever we've been put into bat, we've always taken the attack to them, because, you know, essentially from losing the toss, you're always on the back foot. So we try and do that. And for some reason, this time around, we weren't able to do that. We got bowled out all out by 453 with, I think it was 18.5 overs left. Yeah. In our innings, and South Africa comfortably chased it down after a bit of a shake when their captain Hashim Amla got bowled out. But fortunately for us, we did lose that, but we did win the series. And yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how we are potentially favourites going into the Champions Trophy. Obviously, it's being played at home for us, so we do stand quite a good chance of knowing, you know, we are able to tailor the pitches to how our batsmen want them to play, how our bowlers want them to play. But in my mind, I don't think we are. I still feel that performance goes to show that, you know, although we might have good, we're good on paper, but I feel like we're always prone to slipping up, which is a bit of an issue when it comes to England cricket.
My name is Steve Bunce, and you are listening to the URN Sports Show, the only sports show worth listening to in this neck of the woods.
Thank you for staying tuned to the URN Sports Show. What are your predictions going into the series?
Going into the series, I think Cleveland's big problem, especially in the latter half of the season, was their defence. They just really struggled, and it's all very well to have LeBron James consistently laying balls in, etc., etc. But they've really seemed to tighten that out in the playoffs. I mean, they didn't have the easiest run by any stretch. It could have been, it was probably, I'd go so far to say, easier than Golden State. But I mean, there were times where the Celtics gave them a decent run for their money, I think. Especially beating them in a very closely contested game, which I believe was the third, actually, of the series. But listen, I think you've got to give it to Cleveland here. In my mind, it's definitely going to be a tight one. Both teams absolutely dominant in their respective conferences. But who knows, I could be completely wrong here, because they're just such high-quality teams that Golden State could really come out and put on a show, as to Cleveland. I don't think it's going to be a walkover either way.
Yeah, I was going to ask Tom, actually. So do you think that is a case of Cleveland and Golden State just being so incredible? Or do you think it's actually a case of actually the NBA's standard of opposition has actually dramatically fallen, certainly over the last couple of years?
I think it's probably a bit of both. If anything, I'd probably say that it's just the standard of Golden State and Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, like, they, you know, the teams that they have, even if LeBron James or Steph Curry aren't playing their best, then they have such talents such as Durant and Kevin Love, who've really stepped up throughout the whole season, really. So if one of them isn't firing, then someone else is on the team. And they've been, you know, apart from, yeah, the defense of the Cavs in the second half, I mean, you know, the vast majority of the time they've been so consistent and strong. Then, I mean, I just think that, you know, you've got to give a lot of respect to them. I mean, there is other teams, like the Knicks have been pretty dire in recent seasons.
This is where it starts.
Team Paul Zingas, so that's it. We've got Paul Zingas. Hopefully he'll stay, and otherwise we are not in a very good situation.
But you've got Derek Rose and Noah, mate.
I mean, if Rose decides to get out of the hospital every now and then and actually walk
on, I literally think Derek Rose is the Daniel Sturridge equivalent of the NBA, isn't he? Yeah, like, literally, like a
very promising hospital career interrupted by basketball.
That sums up really, doesn't it? Oh yeah, Tommy, as you were saying, mate, sorry.
So I mean, yeah, when you take teams like the Knicks, and obviously they have sort of fallen off from where they want to be, but yeah, overall, I just think that you've got to give a lot of respect to you know, all the teams. You've got to give a lot of respect to Golden State and to the Cavs, because I mean, they've been so good for you know, a few seasons now, and that doesn't happen by chance.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be, if you're not a fan of basketball and you want to get into watching it, I fully recommend, although it is late when you have to watch it, I do fully recommend, if you've got any free time and if you find yourself awake at ridiculous hours in the morning, like 2 a.m, then, you know, go online, go and watch it. It should be a fantastic finals.
I mean, you can get a season pass and pretty much watch almost every single big game.
For quite good value for money as
I mean,
well,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah,
especially since you consider, like, there are consistent, like, basketball teams in the NBA will be playing like 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
So it's really good if you want to get into basketball. I don't know, if your birthday's coming up, get someone to smash the cash and get you an NBA season pass.
I love how we've basically done the job of advertising the NBA pass.
We are in no way affiliated.
We are no way affiliated for them. But why listen to them when you can listen to us on Your Own Sport? That's what I'm saying. So very quickly, guys, literally just one word from each of you. Who to win the finals? Well, actually, no, more than one word. Who to win the finals, and then how many games, Jack?
I reckon Cavs 4-2.
Oh, that's interesting. Alex?
Not the Knicks.
No. Won't be the Knicks for a long time, it seems, mate.
I think I'm going to say Cleveland, yeah, 4-2.
And then what about yourself, Tom?
I'll go against the grain. I'll say Golden State 4-1.
4-1. I was actually thinking Golden State 4-1 as well. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. So we've now got a little bit of time to talk about the French Open. Thank you very much for staying tuned to Your Own Sport, by the way. I hope you're doing well on this Tuesday evening when everyone here in the studio should probably be revising, but instead we're doing this. So, Tom, what has happened at the French Open?
So mainly there's been a couple of big shocks so far in the women's in the WTA. So Konta's gone out, and I think Kerber went out as well. And these are two sort of, you know, Kerber was the top seed and she's gone out in the first round, which is a massive shock. It's not her preferred court. This is the thing, that the French Open is an interesting one because it's right at the start. It's the first Grand Slam of the season, and quite a lot of the time players are rusty coming into it. And both players sort of have really sort of failed to get off the ground with it. Konta is probably slightly more surprising, but again, she, you know, the last three or four seasons, she hasn't got past the first round. So I think, you know, when you've got players that are coming in, they get seeded very highly because of their how they've been doing in, you know, on a couple of minor, you know, Italian or the Geneva Open or something. But then actually when they come against some fairly decent players, then, you know, if they don't have the best day, which is, you know, Clay really can bring out the worst in some tennis players at times, then, you know, then they screw up. And that's what's happened at the start. But, you know, it's very rare that you go through any Grand Slam tournament, you know, men's or women's, without having a couple of shocks in there somewhere. You know, that's why they're the most exciting tournaments, really.
Interestingly enough, actually, had Andy Murray lost today, it would have been the first time both top seeds have exited the Grand Slam in round one for the first time in the Open era. But thankfully for Team GB, that's not been the case. He has beaten Andrei Kuznetsov 6-4, 4-6, 6-2, 6-love, and will go on to face Martin Klizan in the round of 64. But
Murray, you know, like you said, last year came so close. I feel with it's been weird for Murray, because ever since he's been number one, he's had a bit of, I don't know, he's not looked terrible, but he's had a bit of patches where he's not played as well as we know he could play. I think that just comes with a bit of added mental pressure, but I think he's dealing with it well. I think his coach, Ivan Lendl, is, you know, he's certainly got someone there who can, you know, he's been there before. He has that experience, and he looks so calm in the stands. Whenever Murray, if Murray loses, then yeah, it's going to be upsetting for him. But whenever Murray wins, he doesn't seem too overjoyed. He knows what it takes to win Grand Slams. And, you know, Murray's won Grand Slams now as well, so he has that experience under his belt. And I think those two together make a fantastic team.
Speaking of coaching changes, of course, the big one in recent weeks has been Djokovic effectively sacking his entire coaching staff, including Boris Becker, who led him to so many Grand Slam victories. Tom, I was just wondering, do you think now that Djokovic has got to a winning start in Roland Garros with Andre Agassi, is this the first of what Djokovic will hope will be, you know, the wheels starting to turn again, or do you think it's still a bit too early to tell?
I think what it says to me first and foremost is how lucky, you know, how great it is to be able to sack Boris Becker and just pick up one of the greatest of all time in Agassi.
Yeah,
so I think Djokovic, you know, he's got a pretty good deal going for him.
It's quite amazing, regardless,
that,
actually, isn't
it? Yeah, like he's, you know, it's not a step down at all in terms of coaching pedigree, and I think it might be a little too early to tell. It's really hard because Djokovic has been a player who's been, you know, 12 or 13, you know, Grand Slam titles now or something, and he's only, you know, 30, coming up to 31. So, you know, really he's, you know, it's not, you know, it's not unheard of for a player to peak before they were 30 at all. And he's still playing at the top levels in, and he's still, you know, a really, really great player in the Open era.
And so we're going to be talking about, given the suspected DUI charge, drinking under influence charge given to Tiger Woods last night. It just kind of shows really what's been a really interesting fall from grace of arguably and probably golf's greatest player of all time. Guys, what do you think just in general?
I mean, it really is quite sad. I know a lot of people, myself included, growing up watching golf, regard him as probably correctly so the best in the world and one of the best he's ever really played, and people like that, like we were saying before with Andy Murray, should be setting up an inspiration for the future. They should be setting a good example, and they want, people should be looking at them kids thinking, that's who I want to be when I grow up. This DUI, I mean, the fact is, when it was made, when the allegation was first made, it's not like everyone came out shocked. Like, no one was surprised in the slightest.
Yeah, that's
which
good
I think says
saying
a lot about his character. No, it really is quite sad to see, really.
Do you think it is actually sad? Because, you know, at the first point, he did cheat on his wife with multiple women. And so, is sad the right word to use? Because effectively, it's his own doing.
Yeah, I think it's a really tough one, because in terms of how you view... It is his own doing, definitely. And I'm not... I don't know. I'm not sure if it's not like a tragic story in a way. So I'd be cautious about using sad.
I meant more sad for just golf fans. More
yeah,
than actually,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
sitting
yeah,
in my room
worry
thinking about Tiger Woods.
I know. Don't worry. I was just trying to, like,
yeah,
you
sure
know, spark debate. No, don't worry, Alex. We know you don't do that. Just like, Tiger, why?
Just to make
why
an official statement, I do not sympathise with Tiger Woods.
Yeah, we'll get down like in a press release form and everything like that. Yeah. Sorry, as you were saying.
But I mean, I can't think. Where was I? I can't think what I was saying. I'm too busy thinking about you sitting in your room crying over Tiger Woods. I'm not sure I was. I think the not wish. It is definitely sad for golf fans, definitely, because he was. You know, a massive cause in the rise of sort of the commercialisation of golf, and when sort of golf became a massive thing, and for ages, you know, even people who never even played, you know, around at the local pitch and putt, you know, had heard of Tiger Woods, and he was a real icon of the sport. And yeah, it is sad in that sense to see him decline as such. However, it's not the first time, and it won't be the last that a sports star has, you know, done something bad in sort of like in his private life, in sort of like a moral respect. And you know, Mike Tyson got up to lots of, you know, various things back when he was, you know, sort of hitting the heights. And you sort of think, well, you've got to be sort of objective about it, and sort of view Woods's golfing achievements in a completely separate light to what he's done off the course, so to speak.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I feel like, you know, these are, it always happens with any sports person, whenever they get caught up in something that happens, mm-hmm. that isn't to do with their sport. You know, it's always blown out of proportion and it always tarnishes their career. I feel like, you know, ever since 1997 when he won his first Masters, and you know, he's had video games named after him, he's got his own clothing brand now for golf as well, and he's, you know, he's got so many sponsorships.
Sports first billionaire as well.
Yeah, he's got so many sports sponsorships. Like you say, you know, he really did jumpstart the commercialization of golf. And I feel that although he's, you know, he's got a lot of things going on in his personal life, I feel like we shouldn't judge him. We shouldn't let it bring a downer on, you know, what such an incredible career he had in terms of golf. You know, I think it was 14 major championships that he won.
Yeah.
So we can't really let what goes on in his personal life affect the fact that he has those titles. And yes, okay, so people are going to look at him in a different way, and he's, you know, he's never going to be returning, as much as he says that he wants to get back in the pro game and he wants to start playing in the, you know, PGA championships again, I don't think he's ever going to be back to that. I think perhaps maybe, you know, give him a couple of years, he might get into punditry, he might get into, you know, being one of the people who perhaps maybe coaches some of the young kids. But yeah, I feel like in terms of his personal life, that should stay completely private and completely separate from what he's achieved. And I feel like Alex said as well, everyone in this room and millions of people worldwide grew up watching this golfer, and you know, he was the pinnacle of golf for, you know, 10-15 years. He was at the peak of his career, and he really stole the show from everyone else. So I feel it is just slightly upsetting in terms of, you know, the whole golf world, to see how someone can have such a drastic fall from grace.
And so with that, is obviously very interesting, but thank you so much for your time, guys. That is the end of the Euro and Sports Show. Make sure to listen into the rest of Euro and throughout this exams week. I've been joined by Jack, Alex and Tom. I've been Chris Young. Thank you very much, and make sure to stay tuned to Euro.
This is URN Sport.